Hey, everybody, and welcome to the Gina Bianca podcast, where we talk about life, business, entrepreneurship, the beauty industry, and beyond. My name is Gina Bianca, life and business coach, salon owner, educator, mastermind mentor, and your host of the Gina Bianca podcast. Product Club is a premium hair color tools and accessories brand that provides high quality tools, apparel, back bar essentials, and valuable hair color education. They offer the most innovative products to help professional hair colorists elevate their craft and excel in their work behind the chair. One of Product Club's best-selling products is the silver embossed roll foil. Great for highlights, the lightly embossed foil prevents slipping and bleeding and works really well on all hair types. The strong, durable foil rolls out easily and can be conveniently cut to accommodate any length of hair. The silver embossed foil roll is also packaged in a convenient self-dispensing box with a built-in metal cutting edge that is so easy to use. You can cut the precise amount of foil that you need each time, and that will prevent waste. Shop productclub.com today for the silver embossed roll foil and for other amazing hair color tools. Discover the essence of Italian craftsmanship and beauty with Alpha Parf Milano Professional. From revitalizing hair care and treatments to vibrant color collections, experience the luxury of the Italian house of beauty. Celebrating a global commitment to elevate the beauty craft through advanced formulation, technology, practical salon solutions, and consistently superior results, one bottle at a time. Alpha Parf Milano Professional, where glamour meets sophistication and hair care perfection. What is up, everybody, and welcome back to the Gina Bianca podcast for another episode of Salon Ownership Unfiltered. Today, I am joined by my friend Rhea. We actually met at Tony Robbins. We sat down in the same section and became fast friends during Tony Robbins Business Mastery. And when I was thinking of amazing business owners to interview for this series, I thought of Rhea, and I'm so glad she's here. So welcome, Rhea.
Hi, Gina. Thank you so much for having me. And I'm really excited to get into it today. It's crazy to think back of that event, because at the time, this was back in the beginning of 2017. And I'll never forget, we were in a room full of older men, mostly. And we just happened to both pay more money to sit in the front. So we got put in the same group. And it was kind of wild that in a room full of men, that like two young business owners that both own beauty businesses were in the same group.
Yeah, and, it was awesome.
I don't even know if you know like how much meeting you at that event like really helped me grow my own business, just by the like few things that like you challenged me on completely changed my business.
Oh my God, I love you. We had a really good time. That was such an experience. Good. I would do it again in a heartbeat. It was such an experience.
It was
good. Really awesome. But yeah, it was just by chance, we sat next to each other and I was like, wait, you're in the beauty business? Like I like clung to you. I was like, let's do this together. It was awesome. But yeah, so Rhea is a co-owner of Bosses in Beauty. And then she is the former owner of a whole slew of wax bars, right?
Just one. Yeah. So we recently sold. We had rebranded right before we sold. So that might be why you thought it was multiple, but just one location.
Awesome. So you sold it. And we're going to talk a little bit about that today, because one of the things that I always think about is build your business so you can sell it. It's a completely different mindset. build your business so that you could sell it. Completely different mindset to look at. So before we get started, let's get some context about Raya. So Raya, what did your journey look like getting into being a business owner?
Yeah, so I became an esthetician when I was 18 years old. So right out of high school, I was like ready to work. I took night classes my senior year of high school. And when I was 22, after like working for a few different places, I found waxing to be like a very intriguing business model. Because although I really like skincare, I just saw how easy it was to like make really good money waxing. And I saw the previous boss, that I had worked for. I just saw her business setup. I saw what I liked and what I didn't like. And I really just thought like I could totally do this. So I packed my bags, moved from a small town in New Mexico, went all the way to Tampa, Florida, where I didn't know anyone except like my mom. And I just started from the day that I got there. I rented a room on Craigslist and I just started waxing people out of this like really shady room that I had no idea was like sketchy until I got to Florida. And I just made it work. And so that for after that first year, I was able to sign for my first storefront location. And a year after that, after I had put all this, you know what it's like to build out a location, whether it's big or small, but I put everything I had into it. And a year later, the landlord kicked me out. And so it was a dark night of the soul moment, although I'm like speeding through it. It was really a tough time of like, hey, do I give up and get a normal job and have fun like most people my age at the time? I was 24. Or do I keep going? And thankfully, I made a decision to keep going because I really looked at like my life 5-10 years down the line. And it was always a dream of mine to have a family one day. And I thought, when I have kids, I just cannot imagine myself working for someone else and having to ask them for maternity leave, having to ask them to take a vacation with my family. And so I found a location that was 3 times the size, 3 times the rent, and a $30,000 build out when I had nowhere close to $30,000. But through learning about personal development, which I started inundating and like brainwashing myself with anytime I was at home, anytime I was driving in my car, and I'm a little bit sick if I sound a little raspy right now. But I would just listen to entrepreneurs and brainwash myself. And I realized that every really successful entrepreneur that I ever listened to had a rock bottom moment. And the ones that persevered through those tough times eventually would become massively successful. And so I found a way to make it work in this new location. And I was in that location for the last 8 years. I grew a team of 10, I think like 12 at its peak. Our biggest month we had was about $165,000. And I didn't take a single client when we had a month like that. I was at home with my babies. Wow. And it was a really well-oiled machine. And so we recently had an exit for a 3X multiple. So now I can focus on, our new business, which my fiance and I run together.
That's amazing. So can you explain to salon owners who maybe have never even considered selling their business, what you mean by we sold for a 3X multiple?
Yeah. So in every industry, when you're ready to sell your business, the bank is going to give you a multiple on your business. It's basically saying, hey, you make this much in profit every single year, right? And so we're going to give you a multiple on that profit. So when you sell, it's pretty much like you're paying yourself in advance for a few years. And so when they look at the multiple, and sorry, so every industry is different. Let me backtrack. In the beauty industry, it is between a 2.5 to 3 times multiple, depending on like the health of your business, right? Other factors play in such as liabilities and assets. But the base of it is on your tax return. Like, what do you file on your taxes? What is it? What is the profitability of the business? And they put a, say, 3x multiple on that and then add in the other things afterwards.
Awesome. So for somebody who's looking to sell their business, we'll talk about shortly, like what that looks like. It's awesome. So that's amazing. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Like, what a moment. Like, when I met you, I was with my employee-based salon, and it was right before I closed it. I closed it a year later when I wanted to focus on my education business. And I could never imagine closing that business. Like, I was not building it to sell it. I was like treating it like it was like my arm or something. Like, if I close this business, I will lose an arm. Like, I was so personally connected to my business and could never imagine letting it go. And then one day the burnout got so bad because I wanted to do something else so bad. And I was just really like not engaged as an owner. And, you know, and then I ended up just closing. Like, I sold my salon furniture piece by piece. It was worth nothing. It was like a very traumatizing experience. Like, I have to be honest, I went to like a treatment center in 2020 to try to like figure myself out. And one of the things I had to really do a lot of work around was closing my business, because I never grieved. Wow. Like, it was a huge thing, but I could never imagine closing it. And now, because I went through that, now I kind of look at my businesses a little bit differently. Like, this business cannot need me to survive, because if it needs me to survive, it's worth nothing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I love that you said your business did $160,000+ in a month and you didn't take one guest.
No.
So how do you get to that point? We'll talk about it, but let me just backtrack a little bit. You said you took some night classes. You went to aesthetic school, right?
Yes.
And what other education? I mean, we went to Tony Robbins, but did you have any other business education before opening?
Before opening, no. I just had a prior work experience. And I think that's a lot of people in the industry, right? Like, in the beauty industry, I think a lot of people are really good at their craft. They're like, hey, I'm really good at what I do. Why don't I open a business? And especially right now, 10 years ago, I feel like it wasn't as easy as a low barrier to entry, because there wasn't as many salon suites. It was like just becoming a thing, but now they're like everywhere. It's so easy. So it's very easy for someone that's very good at what they do to be like, why not open my own business? And then you open your own business and you realize there's so many other things that go into it. And yeah. So that was me. And I remember when I first invested in Business Mastery with Tony Robbins, where I met you, we had just had our first $300,000 year, which sounds amazing on paper, but I was working every day in the business. I was still waxing. I was doing so many different roles in the business, and I didn't know where any of the money was. And it's funny that you talk about like you being so heavily attached to the business that you closed, because that was very much me too at the time when we first went there. I called it my baby. And he talked about that at Business Mastery. He's like, your business is not your baby. Your business is your business. And that's really where, for me, like the trajectory really changed of removing myself from the treatment room and really getting more people in the business and really breaking through the fears of this business can't run without me doing services. I'll go broke. Clients will leave. All the fears that come up that are very normal. And really, that was the game changer for me, Gina. And like, you helped me a lot in that too. Like, you challenged me of one of our biggest services at the time was booking out 3 months in advance. And I had another room open and I was going to start randomly doing facials in that room. And you were like, I don't know if you even remember this, but you told me, I'll never forget. You're like, is it really true that she's the only one that could do microblading like better than anyone else? Like, you challenged me on the belief that I thought I only had, could only find one person. And I got another microblading artist in after that, and it doubled our revenue right away.
Oh my God, I have chills.
Yeah. We went from $30,000 to $60,000 a month in 60 days. And so that was a start. So when you see the return on investment after you invest in mentors, right? Like, we paid what, $10,000 to go to that event. I paid an extra
I would go again.
$1,000 on top to sit in that in the front with you.
Yeah, the VIP. Yep, me too.
It was so scary at the time, but the return was like stupid, right? Like the amount of money I've made because of that event was just limitless. And so then since after that, I mean, I've invested every single year after that in multiple different mentors to become a better business owner.
I love that. So you may not have formal education, formal like business education, which you did take classes and stuff like that, but it really came from when you became a business owner and realized I wanted more, I need help, or I want to grow in this expertise. So that's amazing.
Yeah.
And I want to go back to what you said about like, it's easy to open a business. It is not easy to manage, grow, sustain, and have a profitable business and have like a fun life, like to balance it all, right? It's like anyone can open one.
Right.
It's but if, like,
yeah, if you want, if you see other people, you know, with bigger businesses and a team and traveling the world and their business stays open, you have to be willing to take that bigger risk, right? Financially, you know, in the beginning, energy, learning, you know, from the right mentors and things like that. But the risk reward ratio is like exponentially disproportionate when you're willing to take that risk, because most people aren't, right? So you're going to get a bigger reward. But yeah, people are the hardest part about business, hands down. The emotions, the different personalities, the managing of everyone, hiring, firing, the hardest part, but also the most rewarding once you learn how to do it better.
Yeah. Well, Tony talks about like with the six human needs, uncertainty, like relationships are the biggest form of uncertainty.
Yeah.
It's like they are the, because you can't control another person. Yeah. You can't like make another person do something. No. So it's like all these relationships we have in business, whether it be with employees or clients or whatever, they make it the most difficult because it's all uncertainty. But when it goes right, it is totally rewarding. I totally agree. I love that.
Yeah.
Awesome. So tell me about the Wax Bar Flirt.
Yeah. So we started out as just waxing because that's what I was good at. And when we had moved into that location that was three times the size, it was myself and one other waxer that I had hired right before then. And I realized we had five rooms in this new location and only two of them were being utilized. And I thought, if I get another person in here, I need a higher ticket service. Like we can't be doing, you know, $50 Brazilian waxes to like make this up and like how much I invested in it and how much in debt I was. And so at the time, microblading was becoming a thing. So I was very lucky to early on, like bring that to kind of Tampa. No one else was doing it at the time. And finding the right person. I initially got trained in it and I realized, what am I doing? I'm already in the treatment room all day. Like I have time to like microblade someone's brows. And I realized how hard it was because I'm not an artist. And although I could wax brows very good, really good, it was a different ball game. And so I thought, who would be really, really good at this that I could put in place? Because I'm really not trying to be more booked. I'm already booked solid. And I thought, let me hire an actual artist to do microblading. It's a tattoo. Would you have anyone else than an artist tattoo your body? Like, it doesn't even make sense for an esthetician to tattoo your face versus an actual artist. And so that was the first thing that we brought in that really blew up my business after waxing. And after business mastery, we kind of just stuck with those two things. I think specializing is really important because that's how you become known for like the best thing, right? Do you want to be average at a bunch of things or specialize in a couple? I think it's much easier for clients to find you. So every team member that I brought on was either a microblading specialist or a waxing specialist. And then as we grew and our reputation grew and we added a few more services, so we expanded what we did, but I still kept specialists in place. So like laser hair removal would only do laser hair removal. You know, this person would only do that person. So everyone was a specialist in what they did.
I love that. That like really elevates the expertise. And what was the business model there? Did they make commission? Was it hourly? Like what was the deal?
So in the beginning, it was commission based. And that's because I think a lot of people do a lot of people do commission in the beginning, right? Depending on your state laws, not every state can do this, but it's low risk, right? When you first hire someone and you only have to pay them if a client comes in and pays for a service, it's very low risk to hire someone. You don't have to have a ton of extra cash in the bank. Further along, I switched how I paid people. So I had to keep people because I also kept employees for a long time. My average service provider, my longest was 8 years. My average was 5 to 6 years for service providers, which is a really long time in this industry.
So really quickly, salon owners listening, if you think of the number she just threw at you, staff retention, she knows her staff retention off the top of her head. Do we know our staff retention off the top of our head? Like, you could tell you're a good business owner, Rhea, like that you have these numbers, like top of mind, you can like name them. You don't have to go run a report. You know. Yeah. Your profitability, your staff retention. I'm sure you know your productivity rate. I'm sure you know your average sale. Like, you know your numbers. You know your shit.
Yeah, you have to, right? Because mm-hmm. you can't.
Sorry to cut you off, but no, you knew exactly your staff retention, and I was like, oh my god.
Yeah. So my average service provider stayed a long time. So when I switched the model later on of how I paid, I never switched it with the people that had been with me for a long time. I only changed it for new people coming in. So what I realized later on, and especially as we brought in like more technology and things that cost me maybe $100,000 investment, it made no sense to pay straight commission on that. So then I switched to hourly plus a really low commission. So say like in the beginning, I paid 30% commission, and I realized very quickly that caps off. And especially when you keep people for so long, I mean, I can't pay more than 40%, which is already really high. So when I switched to hourly, it was hourly plus I started at 5% commission. So there was so much more room for margin in the business. There was more room for bonuses. There was more room for growth for the employees. And so I think that's a better model personally, but I understand why everyone can't start off that way because it's much more expensive in the beginning.
Totally. And so you were in the treatment room in the beginning and you were booked, kind of holding the place up. And yeah. Then you started getting your team and then you went to Business Mastery and then you kind of got out of the treatment room. What was your daily role? Like how did you engage in your business? When I had my salon and I got out from behind the chair, I was so awkward. Like I didn't know what to do. Like I didn't want to be seen on the floor because clients would be like, why aren't you doing my hair if you're here? And I just wasn't as good at training when I wasn't doing hair. And so I often like would just hide in my office and like work on stuff, but I wasn't really seen. Like it was hard for me to find my place. Now I have my place, you know, my place is to support my managers and to go around distracting others and be like the fun person and like talk to people and build relationships. But my main role is to support my leaders. What was your role daily when you got out of the treatment room?
Yeah. So I was probably very similar to you, Gina. Like it is just weird in the beginning because it's not normalized yet, right? Like, especially when you first start and your identity is so much in it and clients don't understand the business and they think you are the business and your team thinks you should be working every day or whatever thoughts are going through their head. It is an awkward transition unless you know better, unless you were trained better, right? And so I feel like both learned the hard way. Even going through Tony Robbins, it was still like kind of figuring it out on our own of like that transition versus now when I teach people very different than like what I initially did. But what I did focus on, well, there was a couple of things. One, the whole thing was a blessing. Business Mastery was one of the biggest blessings because right after that, I got diagnosed with MS and I couldn't move half my body. So I couldn't laugh. If I wanted to, which honestly was a really good excuse. So anytime the clients would ask why I wasn't there waxing, hey, she literally can't right now. So that next year for me, as I removed myself, there was so much that I decided to implement from that event. So a lot of what I did was just implementation of what I had learned of like strategies and marketing and things like that. Once that was done, I kind of went like on a healing journey of like, all right, let me figure out how to heal myself naturally. And at the same time, I'm going to travel because a nurse literally looked at me when I was in the hospital and was like, Oh, just so you know, you should travel now because later on in life, you probably won't be able to travel.
Wow.
So I was like, all right, I guess I better go travel.
Wow. I can't imagine someone saying that to me.
Yeah, well, a doctor, even a neurologist, looked me in the eye and was like, you'll never walk again if you don't take this drug. And I took it initially, but you're supposed to take it every 6 months, and I haven't taken it since 2017. And I'm fine.
Wow.
So don't always believe people in the, do your own research on things. But anyway, so going back to the business, my main focus, like, I think what a lot of people miss when they start hiring team members, and I think this is really important for longevity of keeping your team, is they might not take on the full responsibility of, hey, this person works for me. They're coming to me for a job for a reason, right? Maybe they don't know how to market themselves well. They want to learn something. Whatever the case may be, it is my responsibility as the owner of the business to help them get booked. So that was really my main focus, is looking at everyone's schedule every day and being like, how do I help book this person? What do we need to do to book this person? And all the little changes that just made the business better, right? Like the little details that could set us apart from every other business in Tampa. But my main focus for a really long time was like looking at the schedule and saying, hey, this person has a gap. Let me get to it of like, what can I do to fill their books? Because I also knew that the more money they made, they're going to be happier. They're going to stay longer. If they make good money, you care about them, you treat them right, they're going to stay. Why go off on your own if you have a good culture and a good company to work for?
And
That's
a
important
stable
to what?
income.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And I love that. I want to just always go back to Tony because, like, you get it, you know. And one of the things that you just said was, I would come in, look at the schedule, and be like, how can I get this person booked? So Tony always says the quality of the question determines the quality of your life. So if she comes in every day and is like, why is Sarah not booked? That's a completely different question to ask. But asking, how can I book this schedule or how can I help Sarah get booked is going to give a whole different outcome, right? So, like, what question are you asking when you open your schedule or when you walk into your business? Just another thing to think about. And I love that. And, you know, I follow you on Facebook. I follow you, and you are very good at marketing. You are always, that's why I thought you had multiple locations, because you're always marketing and promoting. And, you're always like super engaged and active in the business. So I always remember seeing your posts and stuff like that and just watching your business grow. So it's awesome.
Yeah, there was a time I wanted multiple locations, but when I really looked at my life and the stress level that I wanted, I feel like multiple locations, a lot of people open them without like squeezing the whole lemon or squeezing all the lemonade out of the lemon in their first location. So,
Yes.
and they are just adding more, they're adding more overhead, they're adding more people, they're adding more stress. And so I decided instead to just make it my goal, how could I max out the one location that I have to its fullest potential?
Totally. I expanded my first business way too early. It
You had
was
a huge
just,
location, I remember
well,
that.
yeah, my first one was 1800 square feet and we had four chairs and then four color bar chairs. So we had eight chairs we would bounce in between and we would double and triple book. So we had people in the waiting room, we had people everywhere and in the wash house. We had people everywhere and it looked really busy. But in reality, like we weren't open 7 days a week. We weren't working extended hours. We didn't do split shifts. And my ego was like, I want to expand. And I expanded. And that was one of the biggest mistakes that I made, was expanding too early before squeezing that lemon.
Yeah. How big did you expand to? I remember
About
seeing
4,800 square feet almost.
huge. It's a really
Yeah.
big
So
space.
we had about 26 chairs at that point. And then as soon as I expanded, four or five people quit to go booth rental.
Oh my.
And that's when I was like, I need a booth rental option, but I can't do it here. I can't shake up my team-based environment. So
When
that's when I
everything was
started,
on the
yeah, I started exper exploring the opportunity of doing a booth rental location. So I expanded, was definitely not squeezing the whole lemon. And then I opened another location and it became really difficult to do both.
Yeah.
And that's why I was like, you know what? I'd much rather focus on being a landlord than, you know, the
It's a lot.
business
And
owner.
at the same time, you were traveling and educating.
Oh, yeah. That's like, I was working a whole other, I was living a double life. I always tell everyone I was living a double life.
Yeah. I think it's tough too, the last, because I opened my education business in 2020 when I still had my brick and mortar. It becomes tough when you're teaching all of these other people how to grow their business, how to make six and multiple six figures. And then you have your team. And although I had team members that were making six figures, it felt like I wanted to hide what I was doing online. And I couldn't hide it from them. And it made me realize I wasn't giving the full value that I wanted to our students, publicly, right? Or in terms of marketing, because I didn't want people on my team to take it a certain way. And so that's really when the idea of selling became even more attractive, is I feel like this is actually hindering this new business that we really want to go all in on.
Yeah, I totally can relate to that. I felt like, with my employment-based salon, I never wanted anyone to leave because I was just like, I need you, and I don't want the clients to leave and the whole thing. And then I would go out on the road and teach people how to open a business. So it was totally bizarre. And I was like, I can't do this anymore. And now, with the booth rental model for me with education, doing those two things, it's very cohesive because I'm talking to the same person, basically.
I could see that.
I having a lot of irons in the fire isn't all it's cracked up to be. It's like a lot. There's a lot going on.
Yeah, and especially today, I feel like on social media, I feel like so many people want to do all these little side things. And I'm not sure about with hairstylists, but in aesthetics, I'm seeing people are teaching their craft, which I have no problem with. It's fine, but they're wanting to start an online course. They're wanting to sell t-shirts, Gina, like t-shirts. And they haven't nailed down their initial business. And I'm like, the reason you're struggling in your business is you're not 100% in it. You're trying to do all these different things at the same time. So how can you grow your business if you're trying to take clients and then sell t-shirts to other estheticians on the side? Of course, you're going to be kind of like, it's like dabbling in everything.
I 100% agree that before you take on something else, make sure your current business is doing amazing, because otherwise you're just going to have all the problems. For me, I have ADD, so I would start a new business. I could start a new business out of thin air, in 45 minutes. I could have the LLC done and start a new business in 45 minutes. I just am that type. But doing all of that from a young age and early on in my business caused a lot of problems. And not for anything, I wouldn't take it back because I had to solve all of those problems. So now when people come to me with a problem, oh, I went through that, and I have the information. So was it easy? No. Was it worth it? I don't know. Would I change anything? Absolutely not. But if you don't want that stress, if you are trying to have multiple revenue streams, which I can never knock the hustle, I can't knock the grind because I do it. But definitely the advice you're giving about having that business humming and doing really well is key.
And then I mean, I feel like it's creating more jobs, right? And this is more towards service providers that are still in the chair the whole, every day, all day, in their rooms with clients all day, every day. And now you're adding another job. So at least get a team in place first, at least have someone answering your phone calls, at least someone to help you before you do something else.
Yeah, you have to buy back your time. If you want to do that, it's going to take time. And usually you have to buy back your time through hiring people to help you. You can't
100%.
just be absent. Like, it will all fall apart. So let's jump in. If you were talking to someone who wanted to sell their business, what three pieces of advice would you give them?
Yeah, so first I would look at who do you, well, actually, let's start this way, actually. First, I would look at what would you like to sell your business for? What's the minimum that you would say selling my business would be worth it for X amount of money,
I
right?
would sell my business for $1.5 million.
Okay, perfect. So can we do a million just to make it a little bit easier on
Yes.
top of my head? Okay. So if we're trying to sell our business for $1 million and we're saying, hey, that's the minimum that I'm willing to sell for. Now we can work backwards for that number, right? And the first thing that you want to look at after you pick your number is, okay, who has or could be approved for a $1 million loan to buy my business? most buyers are not going to have $1 million cash on hand. Most people that have $1 million cash might be more of like the investor route. I don't know. I can't say they wouldn't buy a salon or a, you know, aesthetic practice, but you never know. But most buyers need to get a loan. So I think in our industry, one, I don't think it's very like as common to sell your business, although I think everyone should sell their business because you have two options, right? If in 10 years, you're either burnt out, your heart's not in it, you want to do something else, whatever the case may be, your two options are I can close the business or I can get heavily rewarded for all my work I did the last 10 years. And so hopefully that's what we can start to get people to realize is totally normal. Every other industry, it is very normal to sell your business. I feel like only in the beauty industry do people are like, oh my God, I can't believe you sold. Isn't that your baby? No, it is a business. Mm-hmm. And I'm ready to do something else. So anyways, I think the thing that most people would probably like try to do is like say, hey, I have say so-and-so on my team. That's an A player. They've been with me for a long time. They're so good. Maybe she wants to buy the business. And I feel like that could be very tempting because they already know the business. The clients already love them, whatever the case may be. And they may want to buy your business. That might even be a possibility, but most likely, unless they're making enough to show that they can get approved for a loan like that, they might not qualify to be able to buy your business with that loan. So you're probably not going to get what you want asking a team member. The other risk that happens is now you, if you ask someone on your team, now your team knows. If they say no, now they know you want to sell the business and now they could either leave or worse, tell everyone else. And now you compromised your whole sale of the business.
So yeah, it has to be confidential.
Don't tell anyone on your team. And even the people you trust the most, you know, you think they wouldn't tell a soul or they wouldn't be
they
hurt.
Will.
They will. Yeah, 100%.
They will.
Yeah. So 100%, you cannot tell a single person on your team.
I want to tell you guys about the best kept secret in the beauty industry, Marlo Beauty Supply. I used to spend so much time searching for the salon essentials I needed at the best prices that worked for my business. As soon as I found Marlo, the search was over. Marlo Beauty Supply is a one-stop shop that is only for beauty professionals, meaning their prices are super low and they don't sell to your clients. Their shipping is so fast and ordering is easy. Just make a free account at marlobeauty.com or place an order by phone with their amazing customer care team. They ship right to you, leaving you more time for your business. Head to marlobeauty.com to create your free account and to start shopping for all of your salon and spa needs.
So what we did is we went through a business broker. A business broker has a database full of clients that are looking to buy a business. And so they list your business in their database and people that are interested will inquire about it. And the great thing is they have to sign a non-confidentiality agreement. So everything's confidential until the sale goes through. But you also have to sign something that say you're not going to tell people that's going to compromise the sale, right? And so that's what we did. And we were actually very lucky to find a buyer very quickly through this. I think we listed it at the end of October and by before Thanksgiving, I think even,
wow,
we had a buyer interested. Now this could have closed in 3 months. We didn't close until July. So almost like 9 months, like an 8 or 9 month process because of landlord issues. So let me backtrack a little bit. So you maybe list with a business broker would be my advice. The exchange of that is they're going to take 10% of the sale of the business, which is a good chunk, right? If you're selling for $1 million, that's $100,000 that's going to the broker. That is negotiable depending on who you list with, but that seems to be pretty standard. I talked to 3 different brokers. So that's the first thing. The second thing is most buyers are going to need to go through the SBA to get the loan. So the bank is the people that provide the loan. They're the ones that give you the money. The SBA's role in this is they're backing up the loan. They're saying, hey, if this falls through for any reason, we're coming in and saying, we looked at all the financials, we looked at the business, and we believe it's strong enough that that won't happen, But if something goes south, we're backing it up and we'll pay you back. So that's what the SBA does. So you have to make sure you have all of your books, all of your paperwork, all of your profit and loss, like taxes, everything has to be really clean and everything has to like align with each other. And if you're trying to sell for $1 million, you need the last 3 years of bank statements and tax forms. What are they called? Tax, whatever.
Like payroll tax and all the things that all of your ducks basically everything. Need to be in a row.
But for the tax purposes, it's, hey, I am showing that I'm making, say, $300,000 a year, give or take. And they're going to take the average of those 3 years, right? So they're going to add up, hey, you had $400,000 this year, $300,000 this year, $400,000
this profit?
Year. In profit. Yeah, it's all based on profit. They're going to add it up, divide it by three. That's your average, right? So for $1 million, let's say the average needs to be 350,000, right? And we multiply and we get around $1 million. So that's the first thing. So if you want to sell your business one day, one, don't write everything off under the sun for tax purposes, right? Like, I know that's very tempting, but if you want to sell, you have to show profitability. And so now, you know, you need at least 3 years. So we need to grow the business to, you know, when you reverse engineer, say, I need to make at least 300,000 plus in profit 3 years in a row, and then I might be in a really healthy place to sell. The other things that come into place are the liabilities. Do you have any major liabilities like debts or loans or liens on the business? The year prior to selling, we had bought a $350,000 M-Sculpt machine. Because the year prior, before we had our second baby, I was all in. I was like, I had lost the passion, but I thought, let's do a rebrand. Let's add in some lasers. Let's become a medical spa and see if I can get my passion back. And so we bought this very expensive machine. And that really affected us in terms of, I didn't know they put a lien on your business when you sign for a machine like that, what they do. So if there's any type of lien on your business, that has to be paid off at closing. So we essentially lost $350,000 at the closing because that machine had to be paid off. So you want to make sure your debts are low and that your assets are high, because sometimes the bank will look at it as an asset sale. So besides the SBA coming in and saying, hey, we're going to back this up, the bank says, just in case, what assets could we seize if this were to go south with the new buyer? So if you own the building, that's a plus. And if you don't, you just have to add up basically every piece of furniture that you have, every technology, everything, and say, hey, this adds up to close to this. And so that works for you while the debt works against you. And then the other part of that is you do need a well-oiled machine. You need operations, you need a playbook, right? So that when a new owner comes in as the owner of the business, they have a playbook. You have to do training, but like they have an operations manual of, hey, this is how this business runs. And if your business is you doing hair all day, right, that's unsellable. You could sell your client list maybe to another hairdresser, but for a big sale, a big exit, it has to be run without you doing the actual service, because they're looking at if this person comes out of the business, if I take this person out, is it still a viable business?
Yeah. For my business, it was not viable without me.
See, I feel like yours could have been though.
It could have been.
And you did team-based pay, which is like very culture driven, and mm-hmm. I think it could have been. You just probably weren't ready at the time.
I was just overpaying a lot of people and I had too much staff. Like I overhired, like when we weren't 85% booked, which you should always wait till you're 85% booked before you hire. And then when I pulled myself out, we were barely making any money. So it was just like, all right. And then, you know, when your top performers leave to go booth rental, all of that money goes with them. So it was really difficult for me to have anything to sell. And then more than that, my emotions wouldn't let me sell. Like they it wouldn't.
No one else could own this.
Yeah. So I gave everyone their client list. I said, come to the network. I gave them, you know, as much as I possibly could. And I gave 2 weeks notice and I closed. It was crazy.
at least you gave them an opportunity to work at your new business.
Yeah, I ran their numbers. I was like, all of you can go booth rent. Like, you're all ready. You can go. You can do it. And then I gave another girl a job who was working with me who wasn't quite ready. I put her on my payroll and had her working with me to do the desk and all that stuff. And, you know, it was just so crazy. But, like, I totally was not in that mind space that you're talking about, like, paying attention to any of this. And people like kind of knew it was going to happen.
Yeah. You know, if it had been, I had contemplating selling a few years ago. So I had an idea of what was needed, but I wasn't ready at the time. I wasn't fully ready to let go. And I wasn't fully ready with an exit plan of, okay, what would I do next? Mm-hmm. And right now when we, you know, sold, we have two kids, we just bought we just built like a beautiful house. Like, we had to have a really solid plan. It wasn't like, let me just figure it out. We had already had another 7-figure business as a backup plan. So it was a pretty good backup plan to go all in on.
That's amazing. So tell us about your new business, the Bosses in Beauty.
Yeah. So Bosses in Beauty is an online business where we teach estheticians all over the world how to grow their business. So we have two signature programs. The initial one is called the 6-Figure Beauty Business Blueprint, where we teach estheticians really how to get to 6 and multiple 6 figures, mostly solo estheticians. And then we have our next level program called Build Your 7-Figure Team, which is all about what we're talking about today, like how do you hire, train, book, keep, and have a high performance team so you can build a 7-figure business and really get some of your time back, have a little freedom, have more fun as the business owner.
Love that. Amazing. Yeah. Well, I'm so happy for you. And thank you for sharing all of that amazing information with my listeners. I was really excited when you said you'd do this with me. I appreciate your time so much. And I think you bring such a different perspective, because we're talking about on a lot of the other episodes I've been recording, it's like how to maintain your team and how to grow and all these things. And it's like, what about how to sell?
Yeah.
Like, a lot of people don't even think about that exit strategy. So I hope that this episode, if you are a business owner, has you thinking about your exit, because your exit is going to happen one way or another from your business, right?
Yeah.
Nothing in life is permanent. So think about that. This is great information, Rhea. Thank you so, so, so much for your time.
Well, thank you for having me, Gina. It's been so fun to catch up with you too.
Yeah, my pleasure. So amazing. Can you tell them where they could find you, or if they're interested in your courses, where to go?
Yeah, you can find me on Instagram. It's bosses_in_beauty. Also bossesandbeauty.com. And that's mostly where I hang out.
Awesome. Thank you everyone so much for listening. And we'll see you on the next one. Before we leave, I want to encourage you to go to ginabianca.com/podcast. If you have a question about anything we've talked about on the series, I will be recording a few episodes at the end of the series answering all of your questions. Again, that's ginabianca.com/podcast, and go ahead and submit the form if you have a question. So much for listening to Salon Ownership Unfiltered. This series has been so fun to record. I've learned so much from all of the amazing guests, and I'm so grateful that I'm able to provide this amazing free resource to all of you. It wouldn't be possible without all of my sponsors, my mastermind group, and Educate with Influence, because those amazing people and businesses support this free education. So please check out all the sponsors. Visit ginabianca.com/podcast to get all of the information and more resources attached to this episode. I would also love to encourage you to leave a rating and review if you're loving the podcast. All right, that's it. I'll talk to you guys soon, and hope you have a wonderful day, and I'll see you on the next one.